Let's go ahead and get started. So I'll say good morning to you. Hope you're having a good day so far. We got a lot this week coming. So I went over time when I presented this earlier this morning, so I'll try to be a little briefer. Make sure I get you out of here in time for lunch. We're going to be discussing implementing effective backup strategies for disaster recovery. My name is Kurt Lamoureux. I'm a consultant up in Alaska. I'm happy to be down here instead of home where there's 6 inches of snow on the ground, so enjoying the warmth. This is the second session. We did two in a row here, and I think that in itself shows that disaster recovery, especially in how virtualization impacts our disaster recovery strategies, is an important aspect to what people are seeing in virtualization and what it provides. So what I wanted to do this morning was really just to address specifically from the perspective of backups. What are some of the options we have for backing up in an enterprise environment where virtualization is now part of what we're looking at? And how does that maybe tie into our overall picture from a perspective of disaster recovery? So we'll spend a few minutes talking about what are some of the options that are available from VMware for backup options. Also, what are some of the third-party backup options that are available? And then just briefly talk about disaster recovery itself as a process. My own personal feelings are that disaster recovery is not so much about technology as it is about processes. You could have the most basic rudimentary tools available to you, maybe just using NT backup or some file copies, and be successful with disaster recovery because you have good processes in place. Or you could spend a lot of money on technology and buy some great tools, but have some poor processes in place and have very poor results with disaster recovery, even though we have all this great technology. So I want to just look at that from the perspective of backups and just try to see how we can incorporate a backup solution that's really going to work for our particular environment. And then I'll present a case study from a client that I have in Alaska where they've been able to do just that. And then at the end we'll have just a brief overview of some of the options available with VI3 and really just kind of point you to some other sessions that are available this week for you to take a look at. One of the things that virtualization provides for us when it comes to backups is we have options. We have abilities to do things that we couldn't do with physical servers in the past. And even at the most basic level on an ESX server, there are several things that we can do for backups. You can still backup the way you always did. You could build a virtual server and as part of that process install a backup agent in there. Maybe it's the same backup agent you use in all your other physical servers. And you can continue to back them up exactly the same way you did all your other machines. And that actually has a lot of appeal to many organizations because they don't have to rework their processes. They can use the same backup mechanisms that they've always used. But with an ESX environment, we of course have within our service console, we have the ability to now look at these virtual machines as merely files. And so now that opens up to us some additional opportunities for backups. We could just back them up as local files to some local device. Maybe it's a local tape drive on it, or perhaps more likely in a larger environment, we're going to be looking at maybe consolidating those backups into a backup server somewhere. So now we can take these files, back them up as often as we want, consolidate them into a storage location, and have access to those very easily. In the ESX environment, because much of what we're doing with these files is incorporating a SAN, then we can also see, well, how does SAN technology add to this? Maybe we want to use some imaging tools within our SAN environment to make snapshots of our virtual machines. And now we have a very easy way to be able to make copies of an entire virtual machine through just existing SAN technology. Within ESX itself, VMware provided some scripts, some basic scripts for us to be able to capture with VMSnap, VMRes, be able to capture virtual machines and store a copy of those files and then keep those files backed up in whatever option we want. One of the major changes that occurred with the release of ESX3 in the VI3 environment, of course, is VMware's consolidated backup. And I'm not going to get into a lot of discussion of that today. There's sessions that are specifically dealing with consolidated backup. There's labs even dealing with that. But basically what that does is offload entirely from the ESX servers this whole backup process of these virtual machines, and basically has a proxy service that then deals with this whole issue of backing them up. And again, still provides a lot of options for you as to how you want to perform your backups for your disaster recovery, but offloads that to another server. In addition to that, of course, all the other options we have are still usable in our ESX3 environments. As far as what third-party options are supported on ESX servers, this, as far as I know, is the current list from ESX 301 of what is currently being supported by VMware and tested as functional on ESX 3. What we mean by this, then, is we can back up our virtual machines as files using these backup agents, and they're known to work well. Certainly, there's lots of other options that you may incorporate, but this list is identifying, and we can see there's a large number of vendors that can be used successfully for performing just file-based backups on our ESX servers. One of the things that is starting to emerge, though, in addition to that, is some additional tools that are not just backup agents, but they're VM-aware backup tools. So, for instance, VisionCore has their ESX Ranger tool, has a lot of different options for performing backups, and is VM-aware and understands the nature of our virtual machines and what files actually make up a virtual machine, and lets you look at it from a higher level and be able to provide some nice management tools to do that. Another tool called ES Express allows you to perform backups of the VMDK as, in a sense, a disk, and be able to actually look for changes and only backup changes that occur and drastically reduce the amount of data involved with backing up these monolithic files that are used for these virtual machines. So there's a lot of interesting technology coming out to assist us in being able to use virtualization as a backup strategy for disaster recovery. And we'll probably see more and more, and there's probably others out there that I didn't put on the list, so I apologize if I missed any. They tend to incorporate some of the same concepts. They're going to grab the VMDK files. Oftentimes, they're going to involve redo logs to try to speed up performance of the backup process. They might even suspend the virtual machine so we get the memory state, so we get the VMSS file, and we have a complete snapshot of that virtual machine from any point in time. As I mentioned earlier, when it comes to disaster recovery, there's a lot involved in this. In fact, our whole BCT track we have this week, much of it deals with this particular topic of disaster recovery. The important thing to recognize is that we have to identify for ourselves what is the disaster that we're trying to plan for. Most times when I get involved with discussions with clients, they say, well, we need to come up with a disaster recovery plan. They haven't really even decided yet what disaster they're talking about. A disaster could be something as simple as a user deleted a file. Depending on the file, that could be a disaster. It could be perhaps a critical service that runs on our network. It could be some core piece of infrastructure. Maybe the SAN's down. Or it could be a whole site-level disaster. Within our organizations, we have to make that decision ahead of time. What disaster are we trying to plan for? Should we only try to plan for one? Or should we try to look at the bigger picture and see what are the different types of disasters that could occur, and see if we can incorporate a strategy for disaster recovery that can encompass a multitude of different scenarios? This goes back to my statement earlier that it's not so much about technology as it is about processes. Do we know what processes we can put into place or that we want to put into place so that we can handle these different types of disasters that can occur? Backups are only one component of this. There's lots of other pieces to really having a disaster recovery strategy. My discussion this morning is really just going to address the issue of backups, though, and how our backups can be incorporated into this disaster recovery strategy, and then how we can use some of the advantages of virtualization to really try to play into that and improve our ability to perform that restoration. Because that's what disaster recovery is really about. It's not about the backup process, it's about the recovery process. How do we actually recover? And virtualization can be very instrumental in being able to develop a consistent strategy that we can know will be able to work. And realistically, what we're probably going to find is that we'll want to incorporate some sort of a combination of solutions. Many larger environments already have some sort of a strategy in place for their physical boxes for dealing with backups. How do we want to incorporate our virtual machines into this? Do we want to treat them any differently and maybe incorporate some of the added benefits of virtualization into this backup strategy? And how does that maybe impact our processes and what we do to perform a restoration? For virtual machines, we can basically put them into two different categories. We can do our traditional internal backups, which is what we're seeing here. I've got some virtual machines. They have their backup agents running. I've got some physical boxes. They're probably running the same backup agent. And perhaps in this environment, we have maybe even a backup server, and the clients offload this information to the server, goes into its repository, into tape pools or something like that, and consolidates all this information into our back-end backups. The advantage to this is it's consistent. Consistency can have a big role to play in an organization. If we can back up our virtual machines the same way we back up our other servers, that's a very simple process and easy to manage. So we want to look at those advantages. And a lot of these tools actually can do a very good job of this. Some of the bare metal restore functions within them actually allow you to capture the entire state of that virtual machine. I mean, not just the virtual machine, but of the server. So there's a lot of benefits to being able to use functionality that we already have within our environment. Some of the disk imaging tools are out there, from Acronis or Ghost or any of those. Those actually can become very effective backup strategies for this bare metal restore kind of process. Now, there are some servers that realistically are challenging to restore in this type of scenario. Some of the transactional-based services that are running, that unless we put in a process in place where perhaps we shut down services ahead of time, be able to back them up, and then resume the services, they don't always work well in this full internal type backup scenario. They can be a challenge to do in a very basic way. But the other advantage to this is if we back them up internally inside these virtual machines, we have the flexibility to do what we want to with these. We could even go and take that virtual machine and maybe restore it as a physical box. Maybe we don't want to build a whole new ESX server to do something. Maybe we have a piece of hardware here. I want to be able to just restore this one machine. I could actually do it to that piece of physical hardware. I don't think that's really an effective strategy these days because virtualization works so well and so easy to build a box these days, but it's one of the options we would at least have available to us with internal backups. Now, with the external backup, the advantage here, as we mentioned before, is now we just see these virtual machines as files. And so from an external standpoint, whether we're using a backup agent or even just a simple copy utility, we can grab the VMDK files, any redo logs, the configuration file, and even the suspend file, and we can have a snapshot of our server as it runs as a virtual machine. This opens up a lot of great possibilities within an organization. If you've ever tried to do a bare metal restore using some of these third-party utilities, they can be quite tedious at times and be able to get a server back up and running. And because of the hardware issues, of course, we never quite know for sure if that machine's going to come back. But with virtual machines, when it's just a collection of files and we back that up, we can restore that anywhere. And we know that we're going to be able to get that to run. Now, one of the things that probably has to be addressed, though, is in looking at our virtual machines, when we back them up as files, we're probably at some point going to have to suspend that virtual machine. And how do we want to do that? How long are we willing to let the machine suspend to perform that backup? And how often do we want to do it? The other thing that comes into play here is the size of these files. VMDK files can be quite large, especially in an ESX environment. Sometimes they're huge. So now this adds a whole new layer of complexity to our backup strategy. Our ESX servers can be pumping a huge amount of data towards our backup services now because of these very large files. So do we have the infrastructure in place to actually support that type of backup option? Do we have enough tapes to handle that? Do we have enough storage space, perhaps, before it goes to tape to be able to deal with those types of backups? That's something that has to be addressed within our environment to be able to really see how well that will work. Now, of course, when we're backing these up as virtual machines, then as far as that restoration process, we need to have a host server for that to restore to. And if we're just backing up ESX servers, that usually means we need an ESX server if we want to quickly restore it without having to convert the disk formats. Now, these days, if we have the right type of hardware in place, it's not that hard to actually be able to build an ESX server and to be able to bring it up. In fact, probably for many of us, in our DR strategy, if we were looking to have an ESX server, it wouldn't be so much restoring an existing ESX server in an environment, but maybe even just rebuilding it from scratch. Just bring up a new ESX server and then begin to restore these virtual machines into that environment. The advantage with virtual machines is we have options. We can pick from one or the other, or most likely be able to implement both. And it gives you the best of both worlds. We can use external-based backups, or we can treat them as a collection of files. We've got a snapshot at any point in time we want of any of our virtual machines. In conjunction with that, if we also have internal-based backups, it gives us the flexibility to handle some of the disasters we talked about before. What about if someone deleted a file or something got misconfigured? Very easy just to restore the file using our traditional internal backup mechanisms, as opposed to having to do a full restore of a virtual machine back to some prior point. The other advantage of being able to integrate both types of backup options is maybe it helps to mitigate some of the impact of these large files that are being backed up when we do external-based. So, for instance, maybe we decide that we want to just periodically do external-based backups, and then on a more regular basis, inside the virtual machines, do the more traditional file-based backups. So one scenario might be once a week, we back up the virtual machine, we suspend it, we take a snapshot of it, we have that backed up, and then inside it, every day we do our normal backups the way we always do. And now we have an easy option if I need to be able to restore that virtual machine and go restore the files from that last full snapshot of that VM, and then once it's back up, use the internal backup agent in it again and restore whatever files from the last internal backup to get it up to date. I found that to be very effective with systems such as Exchange servers and so forth, where being able to rebuild a whole Exchange box can be quite tedious and then be able to restore into it. But to be able to just restore the virtual machine and then from a file backup restore the database from the last internal backup is quite effective. Now, when we actually look at the perspective of the disaster recovery, it's not just about the backups. Now it's about the restoration. And if we're looking at a high level, we're talking about site-level disasters. What do we need to have in place to be able to deal with this? Now we're looking at, you know, what type of hardware do I have available? Do we have our software readily available? Am I going to do this off-site? How are we going to get that information off-site? Do we have a mechanism already in place for offloading all those data backups to a location where we can perform that? To me, the most important piece of this is, do we have documentation? Do we have instructions that actually identify how this process would work? How do you actually go about doing this? Maybe we have all the pieces there, but if we haven't ever consistently gone through and documented that process, what if the disaster is that you're not there? Can someone else be able to go through and perform this restoration based on the instructions that we've created ahead of time that identify how that process will work? And again, when we're talking about virtualization, how do we want virtualization to tie into this strategy? How much do we want to implement using the virtual machine concept, these file-based servers, into this process? Once we decide all this, then we can identify how we want to proceed and incorporate this strategy. So I just want to take a few minutes and talk about a particular case study of a client of mine in Alaska. They're a utility company, and not extremely large. They're running four ESX servers. They're on 252, I believe, right now. It's a single site, but they're utilizing SAN storage for most of what they're storing for their virtual machines. They have about 40 production virtual machines. Most of what they're doing actually for servers now, the majority of them are virtual machines at this time. But for quite a while, they've had a backup system in place using IBM's Tivoli Storage Manager, TSM. Works well. They have some AS400 servers and a few other things as well. So it actually provides one consistent platform that they can use to back up all of their servers. So they've been real happy with that solution and wanted to be able to make sure that virtualization in this environment was going to tie in nicely. So their goal really was to make sure that they had a consistent way for all servers, whether they're physical boxes or virtual machines, that they had a consistent approach that works well for all of them. In addition, they identified what the disasters were that they were planning for in their documentation. Being able to identify how to restore critical files, how to restore critical services if it's just a service failure, single server failures, and then, of course, to the site level failure. And they have documented processes for all of these. And again, part of their strategy, their goal was to make sure that it could be done not just for virtual machines, but their physical boxes as well. So they tried to make sure it was a consistent approach that would easily incorporate all these different functions. So at the site level, what were some of the things that they looked at for implementing a site-level disaster recovery? Well, the first process they had to decide as an organization is what are the most critical services and data that would have to be restored in their environment. Probably one of the most common ones these days is email, so that communication can be restored quickly. Another one is for accounts receivable. You know, they want to be able to still generate revenue. How do they get that to come in as well? So those are identified for them as critical systems. As far as data, critical data for them was, as a utility, how to be able to get their technicians information on utilities, where all their poles are and so forth. So it made it easy for them to identify, once they found what these critical pieces were, then to figure out how do we quickly get that information up as fast as we can. So then they go through, make sure they have copies of things as simple as software. Do we have offsite copies of software? They have copies of all of the current software that's being used for any of these critical systems is stored offsite. They have the data that's associated with that is stored offsite. And they have an arrangement with a service provider for access to hardware offsite. So if there is a disaster, they know that they can bring up hardware that will run these critical systems and then be able to bring this system up. They've documented this process, how it works, and they've also tested it. So twice a year, they send a team out and test the process that they've developed and see how it works. And they go through their whole scenario, building their tape server, restoring all the functionality to it, from there all the way to this process here, being able to restore all the pieces that have been identified as critical systems. So the way they implemented that was, again, primarily through the use of their backup services. They used TSM as their core method of being able to incorporate the restoration of all their critical systems. So for the physical boxes, that's obviously internal-based backups. For the virtual machines, they use a combination of internal backups and external backups. Their particular backup solution, and many enterprise-level backup products do this today, it keeps a continuous inventory of what is on that particular server. So any point in time when they do a backup, all it does is backup changes. So it's very easy for them inside the virtual machines, as well as their physical servers, to do backups as often as they want, and the only thing that's ever captured is changes on those boxes. Now, the other issue with virtual machines is we want to back them up from the outside is when can we bring them down. One of the things that surprised me in working with this client is when they actually stopped and looked at when are these servers used, these virtual machines, they found it was quite easy for them to schedule a period of time to have that be down and not be available. So it wasn't as much of a challenge for them as we initially thought to be able to just simply suspend a virtual machine, back up the files, and then resume it. But it just took time to identify when that would be. For many systems, even though the utility is running 24/7, a lot of the basic administrative staff is only there from around 6 to 6. So there's plenty of opportunities in the evening to shut down systems that are used by those personnel and back those up. Other processes, maybe batch-based processes that run at night, actually during the day, it was quite simple to be able to bring those down for a period of time and perform the backup. So what they ended up implementing was on a weekly basis, they would shut down each of those machines and they would stagger it throughout the week, simply suspend the virtual machine, back up all the files associated with that, and then resume it. And once they identified when they could do that, they found it was quite simple to do. Now, the other piece that they incorporated, which I'm going to talk about here in just a minute, is how they were able to, even though they have multiple ESX servers, consolidate the view of that backup of all their virtual machines into a single namespace, which made it very easy to be able to go back and perform restores of virtual machines later on. So as far as how they used the TSM, their Tivoli Storage Management, as a mechanism for doing this, the ESX servers have the backup agent installed so they can do these backups of the virtual machines. And since it's there, they can also use it to back up the ESX host. Now, they don't use that in their disaster recovery strategy. They just rebuild ESX servers when they perform their DRs. But still, by backing up the files on the ESX servers, if something gets misconfigured later, they can always restore a configuration file, and they've got full backups of their ESX hosts as well. Now, anytime they back up an ESX server, they always exclude the VMFS partitions because most of those files would never be able to be backed up. The virtual machines are running. But in addition to that, they have separate backup mechanisms that get triggered when they want to run the virtual machines. Now, inside the virtual machines, they have their normal TSM agent, their backup agent that runs in the virtual machines, and most of those are scheduled each night to perform a backup of any changes that occurred in the last 24 hours. Some systems that are more critical, they back up twice a day. Their Exchange server, they back up hourly. So they have other mechanisms in place depending on the specific nature of the data to identify internally how often that'll be performed. Now, as far as backing up the virtual machines themselves, they have a separate configuration in place to be able to control that process. And here's an example of how that works. And I'm not going to get into all the specific details, but a couple of things I wanted to highlight that are specific to Tivoli, but may translate to your backup environment if you're using some different software. One of the things that's highlighted here is a reference that near the bottom, that fourth line, makes sparse file. One of the features of Tivoli when it does a backup of an extremely large file is it looks for large amounts of blank space and shrinks the file down to improve the backup time and restoration of the file, which is great for backup times, but when it actually goes to restore the file, it decides, well, this is unnecessary space, so it removes it. And the VMDK files aren't too happy if they suddenly change size. So one of the things that we have to incorporate then in this particular environment is you have to tell it not to perform that function so that when we restore our VMDK files, they're always the size they need to be so they'll run properly. This caught us off guard because at first when we began to implement this, we didn't have this properly configured, and many of our backups restored fine. They always backed up great. But then we came across a virtual machine we tried to restore, and it was not successfully able to restore. And so we ended up having to rebuild the machine as a result of that. But so again, it's important to be able to go through and test these and make sure that you have all the mechanisms in place to deal with things like very large files that will be found in virtual machines. Node name I'm going to skip over and talk about in just a little bit. The last piece to this ties into the node name concept is the virtual mount point. Normally on an ESX server, they're going to have their own unique physical path to the SAN. And so if you have multiple machines all pointing to the same SAN storage space, their actual path that they're going to use will be slightly different. With this mechanism here, we're telling Tivoli, don't look at the literal path that you use. Look at the friendly name that we assigned to it. And no matter what the path was called, we can call them all, you know, the first partitions, maybe VMSAN1, second one VMSAN2, and so forth. And now it'll use those names to perform the backups, and it gave us a consistent file path between our virtual machines. And you'll see why we use that in just a second when we talk about the node names. When we back up files off of a server, pretty common approach here is it's going to identify each machine uniquely and track that separately on the back end when it stores those files. So in this example here, I have four different ESX servers. When they get back, when they send their backups to the backup server, it stores and tracks separately for each server what files have been backed up off of that machine. So I have four servers here, four independent backups within that system. Now picture what happens when we use vMotion or we manually start moving virtual machines from one ESX server to another. I may not have moved the files on the physical box, but as far as the backup server is concerned, I just deleted some very large files off of one server, and I just added some very large files on another server. It causes quite a amount of change in the back end within my ESX environment. Now, in addition to that, if I want to go and restore these later, I have to know where they were. So I got to remember, well, was it on ESX1 or was it on ESX3? And then you have to go look into each one of those namespaces on the back end to be able to find that virtual machine. So what we did as an alternative in this environment is we utilized what are called node names within Tivoli. Basically, it's a way to be able to kind of isolate the physical host of the box and, in this case here, consolidate them all into a single namespace. So in this example, anytime our virtual machines were backed up in this environment, they are all backed up as if they're a single physical box. So on the back end, the Tivoli server always sees all virtual machines backed up as if they all came from one physical server. And that's why we use the mount point, so we have the same logical names for all the files. And it sees there's just one virtual environment where all these virtual machines run. Makes it very easy from a restoration standpoint. When we want to restore any of these virtual machines, we go to the virtual node name out there for all of our VMs, and we know within that path, that's where all the virtual machines are going to be located. So it made it very easy for us to have the flexibility in this scenario to be able to restore virtual machines wherever we want and find them very quickly. Now, one of the challenges that comes up when we look at this is how to be able to identify what suspend times are going to be acceptable for being able to perform these backups. Now, there's lots of options to help speed this process up. One of the most common techniques that's being used is to create redo logs. And once you create a redo log, that original VMDK file is now basically read-only. You can back that file up right now. And now when you go to suspend, when you suspend, and during that time it's suspended, we just back up the VM, the redo log and the VMSS file, and we can quickly bring the server back up. Some are even finding that their VMDK file is so large that the time it took to back that up, now their redo file has grown fairly large. They'll actually make another redo log on top of that, back up the first one, and then suspend, so they try to really minimize the downtime associated with that process. That does get a little complex, and we have to look at, you know, what are the number of redo logs that are going to be created on our VMFS partition and so forth. But really, it's about how much time is acceptable for us to bring these down, perform the backup, and bring them back up. And some of the third-party tools that are available now are really helping to speed up this process using technology that's kind of VM-aware and be able to have these happen very quickly. So if that's really critical for your environment and you want to be able to back them up as virtual machines, you might start looking at some of those third-party tools for doing that. In their particular environment, it really wasn't an issue. The speed they were able to get with these, see, they were able to back up about a gig a minute is what they've seen as they've performed these backups. The time it takes to suspend, perform the backups, and restore, it was an acceptable outage for them. So they were fine with that. They didn't have to go through a complicated process of multiple redo logs as part of their backup in the suspend and restore process. They kept it very simple, very easy to use, and then a very simple process for the restore. They just look for VMDK files and the VMSS file associated with that, and it comes right back up. So how did they actually implement this? Well, what they were using, since they're treating these as files, they looked at how they were doing other file-based backups for maybe dumps out of databases and so forth. And those they scheduled on periodic basis, so they decided to do the same with the virtual machines. They actually have a Perl script that runs on all their ESX servers, and it fires off every hour, and it checks to see, are there any virtual machines that are scheduled to be backed up right now? So they can back up a virtual machine any day of the week, any hour of the day, and they just simply create a configuration file that controls which virtual machine gets backed up when. So with that process, it's simply each host box simply looks to see what VMs do I have registered that are running on this machine compared to the file, and if it needs to perform a backup, suspends the file, or suspends the VM, reads now the configuration file to identify where's the disk located, where's the suspend located, and be able to back up at one time all the files associated with that virtual machine. If you're going to go through a somewhat manual process like this, it's definitely important that you read the VMDK file, the VMX file, to find those things and not just assume where they're at. If you use vMotion or tools like that to move virtual machines, that information can change over time. So you don't want to make assumptions as to where those files are located or what they're called. They actually look at that VMX file when you perform that backup. Now, once they finished all that, they actually use those logs that are generated by their backup agent to generate a web page, so each morning they can come in and look and see what the status was of the backups of not only their virtual machines, but also their physical boxes as well. So all of those are incorporated into one common backup strategy. One of the things that comes from this as well is if someone creates a new virtual machine and they forget to go in and flag the configuration file, if a machine is registered but not shown in the file, that generates in the web report as well, so people are quickly able to see that there's a virtual machine out there that doesn't have a scheduled backup, and then they can act accordingly. The other thing I wanted to mention, if you are interested in getting, I can't give you the actual copy, but I have kind of a stripped-down version of it available. Feel free to just jot down my email address if you're interested in seeing what are some of the processes. It's really a fairly straightforward process of being able to back up these files and see how that can be done. There's a few other examples on the forums and VMware site for doing the same type of thing as well. But really what I wanted to get to then is how do they incorporate this into their disaster recovery? What their strategy is for doing disaster recovery is first they have to rebuild their Tivoli server. So at the disaster recovery site, the first thing they build is their Tivoli box. They add all the tapes into their tape pool, begin the process of being able to register all that. While that's happening, they're building ESX servers. Once those are ready and they install the backup agent on the ESX server, now they can simply begin to restore virtual machines. And the process actually has worked very quickly for them to be able to restore these environments. Even systems that normally run as physical servers, one of the things they found to be very effective is to do a P2V migration of the box simply to have a virtual machine copy of that physical server. And so now that's what they use for disaster recovery. They keep that as part of their backup set, and when they go down to perform a recovery, for instance with their Exchange server, it normally runs as a physical box, but we have a virtual machine copy of it that we can bring up, and then from inside of that, we just do a normal restore of the Exchange database, get the latest copy, and we have it up and running. So it's interesting to see the possibilities of how you can combine virtualization not only for backing up, but also for this disaster recovery strategy. And because of using virtual machines, it's a consistent process. And they've been able to test it time and time again. They have an extremely high level of confidence in what can be accomplished during that disaster recovery drill. Before they began to implement virtual machines, when they would try to accomplish this task, they'd spend a full week down there, loads of overtime, dealing with driver compatibility issues, complicated file restore processes, and were very unsatisfied with what they were able to accomplish and didn't have a high level of confidence in what they'd be able to restore and how long it would take. Once they've been able to implement ESX into this equation now, and the systems that are sitting there as virtual machines, they've been able to do it time and time again. They got it now within 3 days, no overtime. They send three people down, and in 3 days, they can restore all the systems that they view to be critical systems to be able to bring up during an emergency. So just imagine the level of confidence that gives them to know that they have this process in place, they have it documented, it's consistent, they know it works. Their last DR, they skipped. They didn't go. They knew it was going to work, they saved some money, they decided they don't need to do it twice a year now because they have this level of confidence in how effective their strategy is. So it's a fairly simple approach, but that's what they were looking for. They wanted something that would work whether it was a physical machine or a virtual machine because they had that mixed environment like most of us do. Because it was so simple, we didn't have to deal with the issue of redo logs and having those reprocess and worry about any of the issues that come with redo files from these backups and restores. They've used that same script not just for backing up virtual machines. They use it to back up databases and other very large file-based systems. So they actually found that the time they invested in it wasn't just for virtual machines, but they were able to adapt that for other environments. The biggest advantage to this is it kept their disaster recovery plan extremely simple. They found it to be a very effective way to be able to bring up critical systems. They've been able to add more and more into this now, not just looking at critical systems, but what would be the next step? What's the thing beyond our critical systems that we'd want to have up and running? And they're confident that they can bring any of these up now by having a virtual environment, restore maybe for a Windows box, restore system state data into that, do the Tivoli restore, bring everything back in. and they have confidence that they can do this, whether it's off-site. They use it quite frequently on-site if there's any issue that comes up with a virtual machine. They use it for their test network as a way to keep their test network up to date. They use their disaster recovery plan as a way to keep refreshing their test environment from their production network. So all of these things have really worked very well for them in being able to apply this. Now, at the end, I mentioned I would just briefly talk about VI3. I'm running out of time to get into a lot of the specifics of it, but I would encourage you to take a look at some of the options that are available through the consolidated backup tool from VMware. What that really focuses on is being able to completely offload from the ESX servers all of these backup issues that we were talking about, for especially the external-based backups. Because one of the challenges that comes up with this is, do our ESX servers, do we want to put that extra load on them of handling all this volume of backup traffic on backing up these virtual machines? By offloading that using the consolidated backup tool, basically now use another system to perform the backups of all of our virtual machines, and now our production environment just stays running all the time, and we don't have to worry about the issues of impact on the production ESX servers, downtime, and so forth. And so a lot of environments are really interested in looking at those tools to be able to do that. So I have referenced here a couple of sessions that are specifically about that. I put up a few others that I thought were effective in looking at some of the general topics of disaster recovery and some of the tools that are out there. But just in conclusion, I would just encourage people to, when you're looking at disaster recovery, keep your focus on your solution, not on technology. What do you want to accomplish? What are you trying to do? And then see how you can incorporate virtual machines into that. Look at downtime. See how downtime can be used to simplify the process of backing up these virtual machines, and how you can find that balance between minimizing the amount of time you're down with the complexity of the process. Keep it simple and flexible, and then document it. My recommendation is see if someone else can do it, because that should be part of our disaster recovery process. Not can I bring the system back up, but can someone else do it based on the information that I've collected for that. So I would encourage you all to really think about this and be able to use this. There's always new technology coming out. I'd encourage you to go out to the expo area and look at what's there as well. So thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'll just take those offline, but thanks for coming.